Ladies and gentlemen, please stay seated for the 5-star podcast on Three Red Kings. Introducing your host, the Eggman, the cult leader of the Secret Club, and the best in the world, Tom Savage.
It's the final countdown.
Hello, and welcome to the 5-Star Podcast. My name is Tom Savage. I have just about thawed out from the game in Musgrave Park. So excuse me, sorry, for misbranding the stadium. Virgin Media Park in Cork. Where Munster beat Zebre Parma 45 points to 29. It was brutally cold in Cork on Friday night. So cold, actually, that on Sunday, 2 days later, I was so motivated by the coldness that I actually went and bought 2 new Columbia fleeces. Now, I'm not sponsored by Columbia. I would like to be, but I am not. That's how much it shocked my DNA on Friday that I was compelled to go and get myself some new fleeces. So chilled to the bone I was. And the thing is, it wasn't even, like, I was wearing a coat, like a puffy jacket. I was wearing another Columbia fleece underneath that, a hoodie underneath that, and a t-shirt underneath that, 2 pairs of socks, but only 1 pair of pants. You need to have more pairs of pants, because it was true. My jeans, which had those fucking fashionable holes in them, by the way. Not huge ones, but still. I felt like a bit of an idiot there, to be honest. But it was a great game on Friday. Really enjoyable. That's to like from the game in some ways. But in others, that was a 70-point win that we left behind us out there. Because elements of it were really weird. One of the things that I'll mention here, we had 15 entries into the 22 for an average of only 3 points per entry. Like, if that was up, even at the, like, Zebra had an average point score of 4.3, right? If Munster had that conversion rate, it's 64 points we win by, 65, whatever. So there was lots of points left out there. And that, in a way, is a good thing, in that there's clear areas for this team to improve. Obviously, it's a bad thing in another more realistic way, though, in that, you know, there was that accuracy come the end of the season will obviously need to be improved. But yeah, lots to like about the game overall, though. Just a few like notes on how we approached the game. Zebre pretty much played exactly as expected. Their kick to pass ratio was 3.8 passes for every 1 kick. They had a higher pass per carry rate than what it might have, a lower pass per carry rate than what it might have looked like. But a bit like Benetton, their high pass per carry sequences happen on transition. They scored 1 try playing that style of rugby. Other than that, it was around 1.1. That's what their pass per carry ratio was in this game. While Munster's was about as on ball as you can possibly be. We had 16.5 passes for every 1 kick and a pass per carry ratio in and around 1.7, 1.8, which is massive, absolutely massive. And it'll just give you an idea as to the way Munster approached this game, which was foot to the floor, looking to score as many points as possible. And did all that, right, while only playing off 3 penalties. Those 3 penalties were all awarded in Munster's half of the field. The first one, there was a scrum penalty in the second half. There was a technical, not retreating, you know, 10-meter kick fuck-up penalty. And there was that side entry on Craig Casey in the first half. And that was it for penalties for Zebre. Which is mad, absolutely mad. But in a way, it's really good that Munster scored the points that they did, all tries, without, we'll say, easily advancing up the field through penalties. That's a really unique thing there, by the way, in that I can't remember the last time I saw a lopsided result like that, where the team who shipped 40 plus points only conceded three penalties. That's mad. But that's the level Munster's attack was functioning at when it was functioning in this game. And I think part of what we saw in the first 10 minutes set the platform for what would be some inefficient work in the second half. Munster all week, because I know this because I was speaking to Graham Rowntree after the game, were talking about being rootless. And by the way, the press, or if you missed it, there was a press conference audio that I uploaded after the match that's on Patreon already and should be in your email if you're a digital subscriber. It's worth having a listen to just to get an idea of some of Rowntree's thinking after the game. Looking at how Munster wanted to be rootless. So at halftime, Munster were 33-7, I think it was, up at halftime. So they would have been very much hammering home that we go out there now when we be ruthless, which is you're throwing on points, you're throwing on tries, you're putting these guys away, you're buffing your points difference. Obviously, the bonus point is secured. There wasn't much chance of Munster losing the contest from there. So it was about, you know, bumping your points difference and making a statement to a certain extent, being ruthless, as in every opportunity we get, we execute. Didn't really do that. And well, Graham Rowntree was speaking about doing things that they don't train. One of the most important things and one of the really interesting things in that press conference was one more ruck. He was speaking about how a lot of the time, and you could see this during the game where we were throwing so many passes from, from the screen, tip-on passes. We were, like, running onto screens. There were, like, tons of short offloads, short passing on, you know, on those deep layers that were rotating across the field. Like, really, really good stuff. But some of it was overpassing, and some of it was a little bit of overplaying. Like, Antoine Frisch here is 15 passes. Alex Nankivell is 15 passes. Shane Daly has 14 passes. Tony Butler is 38. But going to the forwards, you have John Ryan with 7 passes, Tom O'Hearn with 5, RG Steinman with 11, Alex Kendall with 9, Gavin Coombs with 13 passes, 15 carries. They're huge pass per carry ratios for those forwards. And it kind of it illustrates that that's a version of the game that we want to play, and to an extent we haven't been able to play over the last while just because the weather conditions have been so poor. It's made it very difficult to play that accurately. We get an opportunity here where it's blisteringly cold, sure, but it was dry, relatively speaking, and you're playing on a fast, hard surface. So Munster are able to go out there and show off this, the stuff that we're training, but almost overdoing it a small bit. And that led to, there was one or two intercepts. For a while there, the biggest attacking strategy Zebra had was hoofing a pass from Munster that went to floor and hoofing it downfield. And that's about the scope of what Zebra produced from an attacking perspective. I heard a few people around me in the stadium talking about how, oh, look, the defense, what's going on with the defense? Most of the issues there weren't defensive issues. They were attacking failures that were then converted into try-scoring opportunities up the other end. Some of that came down to poor individual decisions. There was one in the first half, I think it was the first try, where Alex Nankivell really should have just booted the ball as it was bouncing, but he was trying to wait for it to settle so he could jump on it and try and reset and go again. They ended up kicking that ball again down the field. And that happened a good few times. Stephen Archer's in the second half where ball didn't go to hand. Munster are so committed at that point on 6th and 7th phase that there is no cover. So if that ball doesn't go to hand, Zebra stream through, kick it ahead. Munster are trying to come back and recover. But to a certain point, like, your attack coughs up that try, if that makes sense. We were playing in such long on-ball sequences, so many carries, so many passes, that if you're exposed on, like, a team who kicks as little as Zebre, or as much as Zebre rather, don't give up that opportunity because they have the ball already kicked more often than not. With Munster, there's so much passing and so much line running and so much awareness that's required to play the game that we're playing, that if the pass breaks down there, if that pass isn't right, that's a really dangerous thing for Munster in this system. We're looking to try to dominate and boss possession on any team that we play so that the possession that they do have, we make very, very expensive. So, yeah, they think they're efficient. Let them be efficient with, you know, the small few possessions we'll give them in a block of 10 minutes. So you'll see that last season, actually, where in the semi-final, I think it was, against Leinster, where we bossed the last 20 minutes of the first half and the opening 20 minutes of the second half, but couldn't convert the pressure. And that's something that we are looking to address. And I'm not sure it's about just power either, right? Now, some of our work, some of our latching around the 5 meter line and all that, it could be better. That's without question. And look, there's no arguing either that having a guy like RG Snaiman who can just basically, oh, you think you're tackling me? Sorry, you're too small for that. To just kind of spin around and just dunk down the ball. That's kind of handy as well. But I think for Munster, for the way that we're developing this team, different thinking might be required with regards to how we become more efficient at converting the inefficient possession that we are basing our style around. Like I said, there is an element of inefficiency that is based into this style. And that, to me, that is an obvious thing. If you're going to be playing 7 and 8 phases rather than, you know, 3, 4, 5 max, those extra 3 phases are like you were looking to try to tire out the opposition. You were denying them the possession by hanging on to it yourself. As I said there, passing failures in that system really hurt you. Turnovers really hurt you. But what Munster are trying to build is a system where we only give the ball back on our terms. And when we do give it back, it's never so far away that you have a whole ton of space to run up on us. Like even here, we kicked contestably when we did kick. Our kicking distance still kept quite small for the most part. So there's lots to like about it. But obviously the 22 conversion is the thing that stuck out to me looking there, where Zebre were more efficient in theory, in the way that they did. And just looking at some of the territory, like 52% of the game we played in their half of the field, from the 50 meter line to their 22. 52% is where we played. Zebre were balanced all the way through. They had like pretty much 20%, 20, 26, 25, 29, 29% in our 22, 25% in our 50, 22, 26% in their own 50, 22, and 20% in their own 22. So we were definitely in a situation where, like, we dominated the possession as much as you could do with the system that we're playing. 57% in territory overall, and with the possession overall, 58% possession. Again, that's pretty high. But that's kind of what Munster are looking to try to build, to play that on-ball game. And we did that really successfully in the first half, overdid it a little bit in the second. That's why there's a really long, you know, large number of turnovers here. Relatively speaking, we had 18 turnovers in this game, which is it's a lot. 8 of those were turnovers won by Zebre, which again is an overperformance based on what they've done so far this season. Some of that comes down to as well, some of the ruck resourcing at times was a little bit, I suppose, because of how expansive we were trying to play, left a few guys isolated at times. But yeah, watching it back, it definitely felt like a 60, 70 point win that kind of got away from us a small bit. Even just some of the stuff like in the second half where that line break from Shane Daly that should have been a try, the same one, I think it was it Jeremy Lachman got turned over on the line? And there was Sean O'Brien passing along the, along the chain to Tom Ahern, putting it into touch. That's around 21 points there, which if you look at the final score, would put us, you know, beyond 60 points into 70. So like that kind of stuff, it's you know, obviously it's not something that they train to not take those chances, but it did illustrate some stuff we've seen over the course of this season where we need to be more accurate when it comes to converting those 22 entries. Like, you know, getting an average of 3 points off 15 entries, that needs to be a lot higher, especially when you consider the quality of the ball we had as well. Like, you know, you what, 60% of our rucks were under 3 seconds. You know, that's the kind of stuff that, you know, you want to try and do that justice as much as you can. But yeah, overall, just overplaying was probably the biggest factor of it. You'll see some of that stuff in the Wally ratings, which is coming later on today or early tomorrow morning, as we build into the season, the Six Nations season. But yeah, look, I think just going a quick run through some of the players, how I reckon they're performed. I thought Josh Richerley had a pretty okay game, scrummaged pretty well. I need to see a bit more from him in contact, to be honest. Like, if you look at how Finneen has gone in the last, it seems like the last 6 months, it seems like he's put on a good few extra kg and he's all the better for it. I still feel that Josh Richerley is playing a small bit undersized. Because scrummaging was okay here. He was up against Mohamed Hassa, you know, young and experienced guy. But I'd like to see a little bit more physicality from Josh on ball. Niall Scannell, good game. We had 91% completion in the lineout. Only one went astray. But he played really well, I thought. Carried well. You know, defensive stuff he did well at the time. But set piece is just very, very good. John Ryan, Stephen Archer came on for him as well at 50 minutes. Both played pretty well. One fairly visible mistake from Stephen Archer, all right, that led to a try. But we do ask a lot of our props when it comes to their skill set. And that's something that coming in cold can be difficult. And everybody came in cold in this one. Owen Clark as well, thought, again, decent performance from him off the bench. Physical, looks in good nick. He's at, you know, look, the pro conditioning, full, you know, full-time S&C. At this level, seems to be doing him the world of good. And Jeremy Lockman had a decent performance. Not sure if anything that he did here will see him jump up the line at test level, but a good performance from him off the bench nonetheless. In the second half, we had the Thomas O'Hearn and RG Snyman both come off around the same time. The plan was initially that Tom O'Hearn would play the entire game, but he had a back spasm in the warm-up. So they had to manage that. So he came off looking pretty wrecked, to be honest. But had a really good game, I felt. Snyman had a big game too. Offloading off the ground for Ruan Quinn's try. His own try, slam dunk mode. Line out, he had one line out steal as well. Played very, very well. He's not fully fit yet. Because I look at that line break that he had where it was a bit like the one against the Scarlets where at the end there he was running like... you know, running like he'd stepped in dog shit a bit back. But yeah, other than that, he's plainly getting back to full fitness. And he is a frightening player when he is fully on. And yeah, he looked good here. Really, really good. And he's going to be a very important player for us to keep him fit as we get into the running. Because the physicality he gives us in that spot is beyond question, really. And then you have Jack O'Sullivan came on, did pretty well. Finneen Richerley had another pretty good game as well. So, like, you look at Jack O'Sullivan, he had one or two good carries. Finneen as well looked busy, physical. It's not just about him looking bigger. He's playing a bit bigger, which is great to see. The back row played very well, I thought. Ruan Quinn had a lot of carries on the edge. He's a right powerful runner, is Ruan. He got two tries. But yeah, no, he did well in that edge forward role. Because if you watch the game back, I expected it would be Tom O'Hearn and Ruan Quinn on the edges. It was Ruan Quinn, Alex Kendall, and Tom O'Hearn who were all kind of rotating into those edge spots, depending on, you know, situation, the context of where the ruck was. They were kind of, you know, falling in and dipping out of those, with Kendall and O'Hearn being the main guys doing the switching. But I thought that Kendall as well did really well. Very balanced player. And as I was speaking with somebody before the game, they said captaincy suits him an awful lot. It kind of brings him on again. And he had a really good game as a result. He looked very, very physical. Defensively as well, put himself about, which is Like, he's kind of nailing down that role now where he's not John Hodnett. He doesn't give you the explosivity on the edge that John Hodnett does, but Alex Kendallin is going to give you balance around the field. He also was a line-out option. He took one or two line-outs in this one, and that's kind of what he needs to do, because as Graham Rowntree said after the game in the press conference, he likes his number 8 to be able to step into the second row, which is what Gavin Coombs did here for Tom O'Hearn with around 20 minutes to go. Gavin Coombs plays like a lock anyway, right? There really is no, there's not a massive difference between what Gavin Coombs does when he's scrummaging in the second row and when he's playing in the back row. His phase play positioning is the same. And for Munster, we play so much phase possession. Where you are in the middle of the field or on the edges, that's kind of the most important role descriptor when it comes to what you do. Graham Rowntree told me that Gavin Coombs is a guy who punches holes for them. They need guys who will punch those holes. And then you need guys who are going to be able to take advantage on the edges. They've got guys who can do that too. So that to me says that Alex Kendallin, long term, is probably not going to be that guy in that role. It seems perfectly set up for Gavin Coombs and now also Brian Gleeson with, you know, Sean Odogbo possibly as well. Although I think he's a kind of a lighter style forward going forward should he make it into the academy, which I'm kind of hoping he does. But that'll give you an idea. Gavin Coombs as well here, big physical game. You know, 15 carries, 13 passes, 10 tackles, one turnover yet, which, you know, unfortunate. But other than that, he had a really good game. Huge output at the breakdown as well. Which you'd expect from him at this stage in the Munster system. And I think the Munster system, when it's fully loaded, will have 4, 5, and 8 being key fellas who we would look to try and punch holes in the middle of the field, with 6 and 7 being edge forwards in that role, depending on the opposition. Because I think Peter Romani will, you know, I think Tom O'Hearn is a guy they really like in that 6 jersey long term. He did play more of a central role in this one. And you could see that during the game where he's showing up off 9, showing up off 10, rather than being on the edges to get to get those kicks out to the corner, or to be a kind of a really super heavyweight pass option out there. There was one, I think somebody in the Secret Club said, did he get stopped by a scrum half in the first half? He did, but there was a winger also double tackling him at the same time. So he creates compressions out there on the edge. And yeah, really good performance, I thought, from the pack in general. I mean, look, Munster won so comfortably that, you know, you can hardly say that anybody had a poor game, really. But yeah, starting halfbacks, I thought did really well. Craig Casey and Tony Butler had a really good game. Craig Casey went off 55 minutes with a bit of an ankle injury, not expected to be serious, with Ethan Coughlin coming on and doing quite well as well. But you could see here, Craig Casey, why he's such a valuable player for Munster in this system. The pass quality he had, for the most part, on a difficult enough day for scrum halves to get full control over the ball, just because of how cold it is, that affects your ability to, you know, fully get that grip on the ball. I thought he did really well. He took that tap penalty. One of the three penalties we got was tapped from around their 10-meter line, and went flying up the field. Really elusive, you know, evasive, fantastic pass in for Antoine Frisch. Really good. The kind of stuff that you like seeing. And I think when you look at how, you know, his ability to not just, you know, break the line, to not just, you know, hit those really nice passes. The quality of his kicking is really good also. And look, there was lots to like about that performance. I felt that in a way, we lost a bit of control after he went off the field, which I think was a testament to just how well he was facilitating the attack that we do. The speed and accuracy that he plays at gets us that little bit of extra, half a heartbeat of space and time that allows you to get guys running on that loop. And it was lots to like about it. Good performance from him. Back three. Oh, and Tony Butler. Really good performance from Tony Butler. like, obviously there's areas of his game where he's a bit raw still. He has to learn, I think, the right time to kind of push the pedal to the floor when it comes to, you know, looking to try and execute an attacking sequence from deep. But he's brave, he's quick, he makes passes late in the line. Even when they fuck up, the head doesn't go down. He keeps playing. He's got a good action off the tee. It was a difficult enough day for kicking as well. There was a bit of a breeze coming in from the north that you might not have been visible on TV. But yeah, other than that, he's got the variety in his game already, which is a guy that you can tell he's had to work on that. Like, he doesn't seem to me to be a fella who was always a natural 10, right? Like, I think that he's really studied and worked on Munster's game plan to basically come up with, how can I be most valuable in this setup as the 10? What do I need to bring here? He needs to be powerful in contact. He carried the ball well here. Like, his balance of carrying is 9 carries, which is good. That's kind of what you want to see from him. From the Munster 10 should always be looking to try to carry the ball on the line. 38 passes, which is great. A lot of them. No turnovers himself, which again, he didn't necessarily turn over the ball directly. It would have gone to, I think it was Alex Nankivell was credited with one of those turnovers because it kind of hopped off him. I think sometimes he was looking for the kill shot a little bit too often. And in the Munster system, that is often a flat pass into a narrow window of space where if it goes through, there's a line break and you're running into, meters and meters of space. But I think sometimes, a bit like one more ruck, he needs to hit the pass that leads to one more ruck rather than going, for the complex play. Sometimes. But his confidence, his ability to take on those passes in the way that he does, very, very good. And very encouraging. Because, this is a guy who didn't come in with a whole ton of fanfare into the Munster Academy. He's in year 3 now. He's just signed a 2-year deal. We like him a lot. Like him a lot. From the guys I was talking to before and after the game, they like Tony Butler an awful lot. If Munster are bringing in an experienced 10 this year or this offseason, which they are, it will be to kind of guide through the likes of Tony Butler, the likes of Dylan Hicks, and as Graham Rowntree name-checked, Tom Wood coming up as well. They want to try and just give these guys as much experience as they possibly can without putting them under too much pressure. This seemed like the perfect game for Tony Butler in that Munster would have been expected to win this game anyway. He got the full 80 minutes, made a few mistakes, but I thought played really well overall. Got some good looks in, good experience. Like, one of the things I've seen in the last couple of days is Ulster looking to try and get Nathan Doak. That they're looking for him to play more at 10 next year. For me, in the modern game, if you're going to be a top level 10, you have to be getting your experience at 10. And your formative experience has to be in that spot as a playmaker. Sometimes with guys and I know at Munster, some of the talks on Jack Crowley last season were, is that you can do a bit of a Dan Carter with him, in that Dan Carter, when he first started out with the Crusaders and the All Blacks, he was playing at 12. The reason being is that you had a more of a facilitator playing alongside him to take that pressure off him. He was still getting the looks, but without all of the pressure on him. I think that is one way to do it. For me, I would always look to try and guess, if you've got a young 10, get them looking at pressure moments, right? So Tony Butler would have felt pressure here. Kicking off in that game, there was a point where Munster were 12-10 up in the first half after giving away an intercept and a yellow card. So you've got to drive guys through that. You've got to let them feel that pressure, but not too much, so that if it goes wrong, all of a sudden you've got a guy who's his confidence is in the toilet. Yeah, so I like what they're doing with Tony Butler. He himself has stepped on an awful lot as well. That happens with guys, though, where they're in a system that's settled. All of a sudden, Munster are playing a kind of an on-ball style for the last 2 seasons, right? For the off-season before last season, all of last season, the off-season before this season, which was, again, a pretty long off-season, and then this season. So he has all that experience in the bank as a young academy player, and all the other younger academy players are getting that experience as well. So we're starting to see very specific roles begin to, you know, form in certain spots. So the, like what Graham Rowntree said there was very, very interesting. Like with the what he wants his number eight to do, that tells us that Gavin Coombs does that, right? So Gavin Coombs does that. Brian Gleeson also does that. He played a lot of second role for Gary Owen last year when he was, what, fucking 18 in AIL Division 1A. So Brian Gleeson can also give you a bit of that. This is the kind of stuff that when you have a settled coaching unit, you will see roles with players almost naturally filtering themselves into certain role sets coming up from the academy. So Tony Butler is not a stand and sling kicking fly half. That's not what he does. He is about movement. He is about variety. And mistakes will be built into that because you're going to be getting a lot of on-ball possessions. The more possession you have, the more scope there is for mistakes. And what he's expected to do isn't ship the ball on to somebody running a line off him. He's expected to add value himself on his own attack. So that in itself, that takes time to build into that system. I thought Tony Butler showcased a lot of quality in this game as well. Antoine Frisch and Alex Ankeveld had good games. I don't think they're at the point yet where they are tearing teams up offensively. That connection doesn't seem to be there as of yet. Hopefully that will come. This felt like a game where the relationship between them, you'd look to see them kind of pushing on to that next level, tearing teams up individually with, you know, with their combined attack themselves. It didn't really happen that way. So hopefully that will come. But both played really well on their own as well at the same time. I thought Frisch had a good game. Nankivell as well looked really physical. I think he beat 12 defenders on his 14 carries, which is really, really impressive. I think that's also an expression as to the way that our midfield and the roles of 12 and 13 have deviated a bit from last year, where Alex Nankivell, if you go back and watch this game, you could certainly see it live, ended up filtering out to the edge spaces quite a bit. We love his power out there. We love his physicality. And if you go back and you watch the What's the Story with Alex Nankivell article, it basically looks at what that 12 position did last year and how Alex Nankivell is actually more suited to it than Malachi Fekitoa. So maybe this is what that looks like. It ended up last season that Fekitoa and Frisch ended up playing alongside each other quite a bit, whereas in the system as is right now, it feels that Nankivell is moving a little bit more towards the edge spaces where he's carrying into more open ground and as a result beating more defenders and getting real good gain line out there. And whereas Frisch is taking on a lot of playmaking roles. And again, like some of his strike running on the outside is really, really good as well. So it's an interesting way to look at how they're building it. With the gap between the next Ospreys game, I've got an article queued up on this very thing about Frisch and Nankivell, how their relationship and just focusing on them as players rather than what's going on around them. To look at, you know, where they are heading into the kind of the business end of the season, which is coming up as well. And finally, getting into the back three. I mentioned Rory Scanlon and Ben O'Connor only came on for a few minutes as well. He was on for 2 minutes at the end. He's not credited with coming off the bench, but he was off the bench as far as I could see. The back three, a bit of a mixed bag here. Mike Haley had an absolutely astoundingly good game. He was really, really good. And you forget just how good he is. He hoovered up every kick that was sent to him, and we got a fair number of them off Zebre. His run back was really good. He looks faster. He looks more agile. He looks more durable in contact as well. He's getting a little bit extra post-contact meters that maybe weren't there last year. That's what it seems like. I'll have to see if the numbers bear that out, but he played very, very well. He got player of the match, scored a really good try. Yeah, very, very good stuff from Mike Haley. Sean O'Brien, a really good game as well. Like, he is miscast as a winger. He is, like, he doesn't have the top-end pace on the wing that I think we want. Like, when next season, I expect to see him playing as an alternate in midfield. And he's very, very good. He's a really good, really balanced, great skill set. He can make it work on the wing, as you saw in this game. He can make it work there. But I think he is more suited to the Munster 12 jersey, where he will still be on the wing, but not from the same starting position. I think that will be the next step for Sean O'Brien next year. But for now, a guy you can slot in there and not think about it, which is really, really good. And then you have Shane Daly, who, again, he's looking at getting maybe a 2 or 3 star performance from me in the Wally rating so far, based on my first 3 watches of it. Mainly because, look, there was a lot of turnovers. He's credited with 6 turnovers on some of the stats that I've been looking at. And he's also got 2 line breaks, which again is pretty good. But I felt that at times some of the passing wasn't great. There was in a game like this, I think he coughed up 3 try-scoring opportunities. So if you're great, you know, rating everybody on a curve, you would kind of pull the guy down a little bit for that. I was delighted he got that try right at the end, though, because he had a line break that I see that line break that he got snagged right at the end. I'm thinking, he's got to finish that, right? Like, Shane Daly finishes that try. Didn't happen for him, got turned over, frustrated, plainly frustrated. And he got it finally, the last play try was his. But yeah, look, overall, I thought that some of the stuff I've criticized him on before, like the accuracy of some of his short passing under pressure in the moment, that needs to improve still. Once he kind of picks that up, like, there's a really good player there. And I'm saying that now, like, he had a stinker here. He didn't have a stinker, but just relatively, I felt that, you know, 1 or 2 of the mistakes, I'd mark him down on those just based on the scoreline overall. If it was a case that you're playing against your top level opposition, you'd understand that. But I felt that he himself would look back at that try that he missed. He probably looked to try to make it too easy on the conversion. He cut inside, should have backed himself and gone to the corner, which is easy for me to say, big fucking idiot in the stands wearing a big coat and freezing his fucking ass off. But yeah, like, I just felt that he would look back on that and go, I need to finish that off. Yeah, but just some of the stuff with, as an inside winger, his passing for me just needs to tighten up certain aspects of that. But yeah, good player overall, and I think adds balance to that Munster back three as well. But look, overall, good performance. Lots to like about the individual performances there. A bonus point win. Like, if we look at overall where we are in the table, results actually kind of fell our way a little bit over the weekend. So we have 2 more games in this little mini block, micro block. Round 12, we're playing the Ospreys. They are now below us in the table. That's away from home. The Ospreys do look pretty good, but we have the beating of the Ospreys. And like I said, like, some of the stuff that we saw in this game where we were really pushing it with the passing and looking to try to execute, some of the scores we put away here, like, outstanding. And some of the scores we almost had were, like, that'd be a try of the season any other season for Munster. Like, this Munster side is playing a style of rugby that I've never seen us playing this style before consistently. Ever. You might go back to, when was it, 2003, 2004, where Munster were playing a really expansive style of rugby, actually, relatively speaking at the time. There was that quarter-final win against Leicester, where we'd lost in the season before. I think that was 2003. But the style we're playing now is so complex. It's so involved. It's so, like, there's so much detail in it. It's a sort of expansive rugby that, you know, I mean, you typically associate with different teams other than Munster, really, you know. But that's kind of what we were doing last season. We're building on it again. And that in itself, that style change, I think, is going to be very prescient going forward with the way I think they want the game to go. You're speaking about game in flow. Munster look to try and play in flow and look to hang on to the ball to create those flow moments. So that in itself is a really interesting way to look at how Munster are going. But yeah, look, looking at the table, we are currently 6th on 34 points. We're on the same number of points as Ulster and Edinburgh. We're kind of in joint fourth, really. We are all 6 points behind Glasgow and the Bulls, who look pretty formidable, with Leinster ahead on 44 points as well, 10 points ahead. Two wins, bonus point wins, really ahead of the pack, we'll say, from fourth to sixth, with Connacht in seventh on 33 points. Benetton, who were kind of dropping down the table a small bit, down to 32 points. So we're in a good position. I still think third is achievable, but it requires beating the Bulls in Loftus-Versfeld, which is going to be incredibly difficult. Looking at how our end of season run goes, it's certainly doable to finish fourth. And again, look, that we don't necessarily have to be the guys who beat all these players or beat all these teams when it comes to maybe sneaking third or maybe higher, but we're in the best position that we could possibly be right now based on how the season started. We have two wins in a row. This block of games coming up, we have 20 points that are available to us. I think 19 is realistic and 20 is certainly achievable as well. That would put us right in position. And again, you look at Glasgow, like they're playing Cardiff at home next on the 22nd of March. They should win that. The Bulls have to come up on a tour up north now, which can be unpredictable. Like, is in the travel up for these South African teams. It can be difficult. Yes, they are playing the Dragons, which they should win that game pretty comfortably. But then they're playing Leinster in the RDS. So there is a bit of a gap between when we play them and when they play Leinster in the RDS. There's European rugby to be played there as well, which the Bulls are involved in as well. So that's going to be, you know, I think it's achievable for Munster to... We could end up playing the Bulls twice, 2 weeks in a row, by the way. But look, just purely looking at the URC, I think that it's achievable for Munster to look at top three. Certainly with the way things are going. You look at Glasgow, they've got a fairly handy schedule coming up. Like, they're playing Cardiff away from home next in round 12. They're playing them in Scotstoun. They should win that. You're looking at then away to the Scarlets. They should win that as well. Scarlets are in, you know, actually they're in a bad enough place, but I didn't think they played badly against Connacht at all. They can be feel a little bit hard done by with one or two decisions there. Then they're playing the Sharks in Scotstoun in round 14. That's another win there for Glasgow, you should think. Then they're playing Zebre away from home. Another win there in round 15. And in round 16, they're playing the Bulls away from home. And then they're playing the Lions. So again, look, they'll be two difficult fixtures. But Glasgow look nailed on for second, I think, at the moment with the way things are going. There's an opportunity for the Bulls, given who they have to play, to drop a few points. I think for Munster, finishing third or fourth is not out of the question. Getting that home knockout game, that would be fantastic for the budget, for everything else. And, you know, Europe will take care of itself. But we're pretty well positioned in the URC right now. We are back into the positive when it comes to the wins compared to losses. And still have the best defence from a points perspective in the URC, which doesn't seem like it should be the case, but it is. And that kind of sets us up for the Ospreys and leads us into this week with the Six Nations. So I've got a few articles that I've had in the background. I've got a podcast as well, which is going to be the first one, done on my new mic on the €5 tier for a big tier K mailbag. Going to be around 90 minutes long, that one. Thank you very much for joining me. Thank you very much for being a tier K subscriber. I will talk to you again very, very soon.